This is the RDU on Stage podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host. And on today's episode, I'm chatting with Amanda Burse and Teresa Genzel.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This, I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
Before the coronavirus turned our theaters dark, there was the promise that some shows just might go on, including the Judson Theatre Company production of the female version of The Odd Couple, just a week or so before social distancing became the norm and sheltering in place became a mandate. I drove south to Southern Pines to catch up with Amanda Burse and Teresa Genzel. TV royalty, who were just beginning rehearsals for The Odd Couple. Burse played Marcy Darcy, the Bundys' neighbor in the hit sitcom Married with Children, and Genzel spent 10 years working with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. The pair, who Morgan Sills, the producing artistic director of Judson Theatre Company, calls the ladies of the 80s, have a lot to say about theater, comedy, and television. And that is where our conversation begins. So what was it about Married with Children that made that show work?
It was funny. It was mindless funny. And people have commented so often over the years that they just put it on because it just takes them out of where they are in any given day. Some people wake up to it now. Some people go to sleep to it. But even back in the day when we were on television live, you know, and not live, but at the time we were taping the show, people just enjoyed the humor. It would not be made today.
I was going to ask you that. Do you think it could be made today?
No. Actually, and that's, it wouldn't have even been made on the other three networks at the time, ABC, NBC, and CBS. Of course, there were only three way back when, 1987. And so we launched the Fox Network because they took a chance on this kind of raunchy, mean-spirited little script that somehow struck a chord with people.
You did direct so many episodes of the show.
Yes.
Did directing make you look at the show through a different lens than being on the show?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as an actor, you're one piece of the puzzle. As a director, you get to make the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And I grew up doing theater. I went to New York to study theater, thought I might have a career in theater. I ended up with a long television career, for which I'm grateful. But I always loved tech. I always loved the crew. I was a part of the crew. And in the theater, there's a different sort of symbiotic relationship that the actors on stage have with a technical crew. So when I was on a soundstage on television, I always paid attention to what was going on, and it was fascinating. And I just think I have a respect for all of the people that you don't see who are involved in a production. The actors get the glory for sure, but there's so many other elements that go into making the actors shine. So as a director, it was just sort of a natural place for me to come back behind the cameras and be with the crew.
Well, and I think if you've ever looked at a show, and I'm a television nerd, so I do look at the show's long, they call them the long totals at the end. And you see how many people are actually involved. Same with the movie. I know you've done a lot of voiceover work, and if you look at the animated movies, there's so many people involved. It's crazy. So I encourage people to appreciate the people not on the screen and to look at all those people who make that movie or television show happen.
Exactly.
In one of the articles I read, it said that Marcy was a feminist, and even though the show was kind of politically incorrect, misogynistic,
to say the least,
you could really identify and even took comfort in playing Marcy. So what was it about her that you related to or could relate to?
Well, I think she just tried to be that best little girl. And I suffered from that syndrome for all my life in terms of she was just going to just go down trying. And she always meant well. You know, she was very earnest and really convicted in what she believed in. And I think there was an innate hopefulness and positivity mm-hmm. to Marcy that I could identify with, and because she's a glass half full kind of person. And so that was a real connection for me personally. At the start of the show, I sort of based her, the pilot episode, on my dear Southern mother. Mm-hmm. And because when all hell was breaking loose around her, she just had that gracious smile on her face, and she was just going to hang in there. And that's what happened when Marcy and Steve walked into the Bundy's living room for the first time. It's like, what is this? But she was just going to keep smiling and hope for the best. And I think that really was long-lasting in that character, even as crazy as the show went on to be in terms of our characters. It became a live-action cartoon, really. We were throwing dummies off the roof right and left by the end of the series. But when you start with that grain of truth in that person, in that humanity, you can go big in comedy and still be on the ride along with them.
Yeah. I love that. Has the sitcom formula changed since Married with Children to now?
Not really, to answer your question shortly, which I'm not that great at being okay. Succinct. She can run on that, Amanda. It depends on the whether it's a half-hour multi-camera comedy, which means it's shot in a studio in a proscenium setting like a theater. You just happen to have cameras in front of the live studio audience, or if it's the single cam, which is more like your Modern Family, which is what is happening probably more prolifically in the last 15 years. Seinfeld was one of those that broke out of the proscenium and went elsewhere, but then it just became sort of the way to do it. Hollywood has a tendency to do that. They'll swing over one side. There's some multi-cameras that are being produced as in pilot season this year mm-hmm. as we speak, and we'll see what takes hold. Right now, they are few and far between. When Married with Children was being produced, it was a much more common practice. Yeah.
Was it done in front of an audience?
Absolutely. Our audiences became a character in the show. So by the end, and our characters were so known, like Al Bundy would step in the door, and we literally had to cut the applause in editing because they would just scream and yell and applaud. And, you know, it's lovely, but it's like, wow, we got a job to do, you guys. We got lines to say.
Show.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, you deliver it at 22 minutes. We can't have all this response. And of course, when Kelly Bundy would cross him, we had a lot of Marines. And a lot of Marines who love them some Kelly Bundy. So, yeah, and it really was comedy is dependent, I think, in many ways on what you are either expecting or what you hear as an audience response, because it dictates the rhythm.
It's very theatrical in that sense.
Yeah. But there is a definite rhythm to comedy. So I imagine, I haven't done a lot of single camera comedy, but I imagine that you've got to, because I've directed enough comedy to know that if the audience isn't there, you have to imagine what their response is going to be so that you can get with that rhythm. And it goes with the flow, you know, the overall flow of the show.
You came out in 1993, and I feel like the entertainment industry was different then than it is now, and that was years before Ellen came out on that show. I guess, what was it like at that time when you came out industry-wise, and is it better now with shows like Pose and other shows that
Will and Grace,
mm-hmm. which was a huge one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So is it better now, or and what was it like when you came out?
Well, let's clarify that I came out as a lesbian because it's interesting. Okay. No, seriously, nowadays in the political climate, the phrase coming out, I came out, I hear it actually more generically, which I think is really interesting. Back in 1993 when my daughter was born, and that was really the catalyst for my decision to put it out there in a professional context. I had been living my life in the light with integrity as a lesbian woman and as a new mother. And this was before social media. So it was the tabloid press that was going to sort of change that story and not necessarily a positive light. Mm-hmm. So that was really what dictated my decision at that time, because having a child is a really sacred event. And I wasn't going to let somebody else tell my story. I had incredible support from my cast and my crew and my producers. And it wasn't until I saw the True Hollywood Story, which was epic. It was like a 4-hour True Hollywood Story, that I saw interviews with some producers and say how they in a way, sheltered me from any sort of questioning or discord. And it wasn't a huge pushback. But it was enough where I was very touched by that, because I really felt very supported on my set in many ways at that time. And it is a different time we're living in now. My daughter will be 27 this year. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, we've made great strides in terms of humanity, allowing for all different kinds of people to be walking the planet. There's still enormous prejudice. All you have to do is look to Washington, D.C. and have it, you know, be raining down on us. But those of us who went through that time together, it was just that time. It wasn't necessarily, okay, now it's 1990 and we've got to make a statement. It was one step at a time. It was one face at a time. And so mine just happened to come a little before Ellen's. My show wasn't called Amanda. So it may not have had the
or
same.
Or Marcy.
Oh, that. Exactly, because Ellen, yes. It, you know, so it didn't necessarily have the same impact, but, you know, she took that ball and just ran with it and has flown high and just done tremendous things in terms of creating awareness and safety for people, because people oftentimes are prejudiced when they're afraid and feel threatened. So when you can just sort of allay those fears and say, it's just me. You knew me in your home as, say, Marcy Darcy for many years. I'm still that same person. And I had the privilege of joining with the Human Rights Campaign, HRC, which is the largest lobbying group in Washington, D.C. for LGBTQ and all those initials, and to help launch their campaign called National Coming Out Day. And at that time, in 1994, which was the 25th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, it was a necessary platform, because every face that stood up and said, yeah, I'm gay, I'm lesbian, I'm bi, and now trans and so forth, helped their community, their immediate community, and then the community at large go, oh, okay, I know them. Oh, no big deal. Whereas there might have been some prejudice or predisposition towards the gay community as a whole.
And I think to that point, that's why representation on screen, whether it's large screen or small screen, is really important. Mm-hmm. We talk about that a lot on this podcast.
Well, and because there's a power that goes with that kind of presentation, whether you're in a movie theater and watching a huge screen, or whether you're at home and it's in your living room. And it's a huge influencer. There's no doubt about it. It's based in advertising. Mm-hmm. There's no greater influencer than the marketing and the money behind that. So with the message that you are sending creatively is important. And that platform, you know, it can be used in a really positive way.
Teresa, between the two of you, you guys are like a time capsule of TV
history.
See, okay, you can say it.
No, I was going to say TV lore. I mean, it's pretty incredible, but you've been on game shows. You've done a lot of voiceover work, but you were on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. So
yes.
Tell me about that experience.
It was such a great experience. Also, because I remember that I thought when I started doing the show, he had already hosted for 20 years. I did the last 10 years. Now, normally somebody does a show that any job that long, they're going to be bored. Johnny Carson was still having a great time doing those sketches. He was like a little kid. His enthusiasm was amazing. And I always took note of that. I went, that's the way to be. If you're going to show up to work, you make sure you're still having a great time. Even if you're doing the same show for 30 years. And he was. And I think that's why the audiences loved him so much. Because, you know, that's the key. If you're not having a good time, the audience, and he was having a great time.
You can feel the joy. And I think that's also what made Married with Children
work. Without a doubt. Amanda and I were talking about that, is that it's infectious, you know?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did working with Johnny Carson on that show, doing those sketches, how did that inform your comedy, your comedic timing? Because like we've talked about, it's a timing thing for sure.
Yes. Well, I mean, any actor will tell you, you're as good as your scene partner. I mean, when you're working with somebody that's got that kind of timing, you just immediately go up to that level. You do. And so a smart star like Johnny also wants to be around people that can, you know, match his rhythms. And so I am good at matching someone's rhythms. So yeah, so it helped me to work with him, believe me.
Did he ever give you any advice that or Carsonisms that you took with you?
No, actually, to tell you the truth, he didn't. I think he really kind of let me go. I found it interesting to watch him with the script. You know, we would get there. I would get the script for a sketch maybe a day before, and I'd come to rehearse with him, and I would just see him with the writers going, let's get rid of this line, let's get rid of this. Sometimes he would say to me, do you mind, honey, that we're cutting this line? And I, as if I would say, yes, Johnny, I take umbrage with that, you know. But and I was like, no. And watching him as a writer, he really improved those scripts. And also, I love the fact that he was really into cutting it. You know, he again, timing. He knew a shorter sketch was a better sketch, and so I loved seeing him as a writer, working as a writer.
And in your TV resume, you've worked on sitcoms. You've worked on game shows. You've done it all. You've worked late night. So, how has TV evolved? Because even in those 10 years that you're working on The Tonight Show, TV's got to change and evolve so much.
Yeah, I would say that for the most part, the acting style has gotten more real. It was larger. The longer you go back in time, it was more theatrical. And look at old movies. The acting is more theatrical, and then current movies become more real. And the same thing with television. Also, as you and Amanda were talking about, whether it's a single camera comedy or a multi-camera comedy, that's going to change the style tremendously. Because I remember back then even doing some single camera comedies, and they weren't as popular with an audience because it was almost too small. Do you know? People but now I think it's much more, everything's played much more real.
And you've done an incredible amount of voiceover work for a lot of popular movies, a lot of popular Pixar movies. Do you have a favorite voiceover project that you've worked on?
No, actually no. I mean, as an audience member, I liked Up. I thought that was such a sweet, sweet movie. But as far as working them, no.
It's as you mentioned too, the amount of people working on them and the years, you know, in the credits, it's like how many babies were born and you since that, you know, so it's, I mean, those people that make the Pixar movies, the Disney Pixar movies, they're geniuses. It's so much fun, because often what I do is a thing called, ADR, which is additional, dialogue required. So they like actors that are very much into improv and everything. And so we come up with some of our own lines, you know, mm-hmm. they encourage that. And so it's just, playful. It's a real joyous, place in show business. Voiceover is fun because you aren't concerned about what you look like. And there's a freedom in that. It's all your imagination. And, I love that element of it. I really do.
Let's talk about The Odd Couple. These characters, the male version of these characters, were introduced on Broadway in 1965. So here we are, decades later, still reimagining this piece. So what is it about The Odd Couple that still speaks to us?
The humanity. I think that's the core of Neil Simon. His humor is sometimes under the radar. And all of us walking on this planet have that connection, hopefully, with each other, that there is humor involved in it. And that's, I think, how he wrote the characters, the situations, the circumstances. They are real. They are based in truth. And when, like I said earlier, when you start with that element, then you can grow it in a way mm-hmm. that is a little bit larger than life and keep the audience along with you in the storytelling. He was a great storyteller. But it's the relationships also.
The relationships.
And, I mean, the core of this one, obviously, is Oscar Madison and Felix Unger, or in our case,
Olive and Florence.
Olive and Florence, yes. And their dynamic. And it's happening now. I mean, that kind of struggle with people and personalities and power struggles mm-hmm. and things like that, and how you work out those differences or not. And
I also think lousy roommates are timeless.
Very relatable.
Exactly.
I won't tell your boyfriend that.
Yeah, exactly. But it's true. I mean, you know, and the friendship. I mean, these two are really dear, dear friends, even though they want to kill each other's, but they're dear friends.
But the show starts just like the male version with the core of friends. And I think that's also what's lovely and timely right now, that you see that that sort of comrades in arms, just the women together. It's a different dynamic without any men in the room.
Yes.
Of course, the romantic interests show up a little later. They get thwarted, not naming any names, but it really is. And Neil Simon returns to that, especially in the female version, again and again throughout the course of the play. And it is bringing in different kinds of personalities, but underlying that is a deep affection and support. Mm-hmm. And I think we can't stress that enough in this day and age, that we need to gather in our own troops and surround ourselves with as much positivity and love and support so that we can step out into the world and feel more whole. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Need to lift each other up.
Exactly.
Sure.
That's exactly it. I told you I can't put things succinctly. You're good at your
I'm a journalist. We talk in soundbites.
Okay, good. Very
good. That's how it works. And what I'm curious about is, you know, male relationships, especially male relationships in the 60s, look a lot different than female relationships across all decades, but particularly female relationships now. So when you insert that in, how is it changing the narrative? And I think women are funnier. Feminist humor, female humor is almost funnier, at least to me. So how does it change the humor, putting two women as opposed to Jack Lemmon and Walden.
Well, truly, it is the craft, and it was evident in Married with Children when you put the polar opposite characters mm-hmm. together in a scene, and there's conflict. Mm-hmm. That's where the comedy comes from, mm-hmm. and that's what yes. Neil Simon realized so brilliantly with The Odd Couple, both the male and female version, is these polar opposite characters of Olive and Florence, and you know, the comedy ensues. Mm-hmm. So I think that's universal even then to now.
But and also, I also think in terms of like Lucy and Ethel. I mean, there is something, when you think about comedy, there's sadly not as many female relationship comedies. There just isn't. But when you have them, that's what makes it so special. I think we're all yearning for that. We're hungering for that. And so Lucy and Ethel, Florence and Olive, the audience, you know, we want more females, and it's, you know, when you give it to them, they love it.
And we all know, when we are with our own tribe,
yeah.
So in trying to speak sort of gender positive here, but, you know, cis women, when they gather together, there's just this camaraderie, there is a safety in that. And I think that occurred in the writing of or rewriting of this play and is present more and more now. And I think the same thing happens. Women talk differently among each other than they do with the men in the room. And the same thing goes, I could say, for men. It's has this sort of sacredness in a way,
yeah.
that creates this boundary that, okay, we can circle around, like I said, like a tribe, and just be with each other. And we are in a new wave of feminism right now, which I love. And unfortunately, it was born out of a lot of negative mm-hmm. exposure with the Me Too movement and all of that, but we're rising up. And even though we have miles to go, I think that again speaks to the timeliness of Judson Theater's brilliance in putting this play on now, because it speaks to this moment in time as well.
And what I love about Judson, and it's not a one and done with The Odd Couple, because my first foray into Judson Theater was Love, Loss, and What I Wore, which was a really beautiful, to me, women's empowerment piece. Mm-hmm. So it's not a one and done with The Odd Couple. I feel like Judson is really on the cusp of, really has their finger on the pulse. Morgan, you must have a lot of strong women in your life.
Oh, yes. But it's a very purposeful decision, Lauren. You're correct. And it shows up in several different ways, from women playwrights, Agatha Christie, Mary Chase, Nora Ephron, to these all-female or mostly all-female stories, Steel Magnolias, Love, Loss, and What I Wore, and now this play. And also the real-life stories of inspiring women, from Florence Foster Jenkins to Helen Keller and Annie Sullivan. Theater is for everybody because it's about everybody. But it's so important to not preach, to just put the story up and let the audience see it and feel it and experience it, especially now, because theater brings people together. It's Women's History Month, you know? And so we felt that this play would really be perfect for that. We felt that it would be sort of what you just said, a follow-up to Love, Loss, and What I Wore. And the comedy is so timeless. The thing that I love the most, well, one of the things I love the most about The Odd Couple is that Neil Simon never says this explicitly in the play, but the real laughs start to roll when the audience realizes that the problem these two have with each other are the same problems they had with their spouses. So where does the problem really lie? It's like a very early version of the only thing all your problems have in common is you, you know, in the play. But yes, 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 strong, empowered women. That's what I come from. That's what I believe in. And that's what one of the things that we showcase. We do it in many different ways. We seek to have diversity in many different ways. With 12 Angry Men, we just move the time period forward to 1965 to get it out of being an all-white jury without changing any anything in the text. You know, To Kill a Mockingbird, Driving Miss Daisy, The Sunshine Boys, all these things. Because everybody deserves to come to the theater and have it reflect them, at least some of the time.
So you both done film and television and theater. You've directed, you've been on stage, you've done just everything. Do you have a favorite medium?
I have had a return to theater. And again, I'll just keep singing his praises. Morgan Sills had everything to do with that, because the project that Teresa and I worked on with Morgan in New York, just that Backers reading, put me in Morgan's brain. So a year later, just like some gift that fell from heaven, he called with a project, an off-Broadway play that had its funding and wanted me to was interested in me to direct it, and I read it, fell in love with it. Five women of an age. It said it's an Irish play. It was written by a female Irish playwright. Lots of females on the crew. It was just the most dreamy of experiences that I could imagine, and it brought me back seriously to my roots in the theater. And I've had a grand time in Hollywood land. I've been very fortunate in many regards. But to come back to the theater where I began, which is what I fell in love with as a very young person, and have that experience and now have it again with Morgan and now Teresa in this play. So that was a play called Party Face that was off Broadway in 2018.
And for me, theater as well. And I think it's because in film and television, someone can yell cut. The director can yell cut. But when you're an actor on stage in the theater, you go, and you just keep going. And I love that. I love that no one can yell cut. You are alive on stage.
Nothing like live theater.
Yes. It's the same thing as an audience. I go to a lot of live theater. Mm-hmm. So I love seeing people living on stage.
Sadly, performances of The Odd Couple were canceled. Next up for Judson Theatre Company, though, is a production of Aaron Sorkin's A Few Good Men, which is scheduled for this November. I'll put a link to Judson's website in the episode notes. By now, you may have already heard that RDU on Stage is nominated for 3 Indie Week Best of the Triangle Awards. We are a finalist for Best Local Website or Blog, Best Twitter Feed, and Best Local Podcast. You have until May 4th to vote for all your favorite companies and organizations. This kind of recognition goes a long way in helping get the word out for so many small businesses like mine, and I think I can speak for all of us when I say that your support as we navigate this scary time is more important than ever. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast, follow us on social media at RDU on Stage, or visit us online at www.rduonstage.com. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay engaged and support your local theaters.